This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. In today's program, the launch over the weekend of a new international anti-nuclear movement, and in Congress, a pushback against a new national atomic bomb monument. This is 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. That and more coming up in today's program. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And this past weekend saw the launch of a new mobilization of the anti-nuclear movement that involved many coalitions in the United States, Japan, India, and around the world. There was a session convened by the Coalition Against Nukes that took place in the United States Congress and on the streets of Washington, D.C., and also included an occupation of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission headquarters in Washington. This new movement is engaged in several missions, one of them to focus attention on the medical effects of radiation exposure. Number two, to call for the phasing out of nuclear power, starting with the closing of the Marks 1 and 2 reactors in the United States, along with plans to meet energy needs through conservation and renewable forms of energy. And number three, to continue keeping a focus on the catastrophe in Fukushima, which is arguably the worst multi-reactor disaster in the history of the planet Earth, including the risk of the exposure of fuel in the storage pool of reactor number four. The people gathered for this event included a wide range of former ambassadors, medical specialists, of Japanese witnesses, and many leaders of the anti-nuclear and environmental movement in the United States and around the world. One of those taking part in it is the Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich, who spoke about the efforts to contain nuclear policies in the United States Congress, as well as the breaking event of an attempt to create a national monument for the atomic bomb, the so-called Manhattan Project National Monument that was coming up for a vote even as he spoke. Here now, Dennis Kucinich.
It is absolutely ironic that as you are present here on the floor of the House of Representatives in about an hour, there is a vote expected on H.R. 5987, which is intended to create and name a new national park after the Manhattan Project. Can't make this stuff up. I didn't make this up for this occasion. But what I'm going to ask you to do, as in the next few seconds, for those of you who are on Twitter, is to tweet to help us defeat H.R. 5987, and to everyone you know, you send a message out that the vote's coming up, and ask people to vote no on the Manhattan Project National Park. I mean, those words don't seem to go together, but they do for this legislation. But I wanted to let you know about it, because that's actually why, after I make my presentation and turn it back over to Brent, I'm going to have to go back to my office and try to see if I can get enough votes to defeat this proposition, which is only aimed at glorifying the bomb. We're here today on one of the most important times in the history of nuclear power. As the industry's proponents work hard to create a myth of a nuclear renaissance, the truth is that the industry's outlook has never been more tenuous. The fleet of existing nuclear power plants is aging, and they're approaching or are already past their useful life. Already, 73 plants across the country have received brand new 20-year licenses on their aging plants, but another 33 are in the process or will be applying for 20-year extensions. At the same time, we're starting to find problems with these existing plants. In 2002, many of you are familiar with the story that workers at the Davis-Besse nuclear power plant in Northwest Ohio, while doing unrelated work, found a large corroded crater the size of a football in the reactor vessel head next to one of the nozzles. Only 3/16 of an inch of steel remained intact at the bottom. Even that began to bulge and crack. The NRC later found that the plant may have been as close as 60 days from a breach. And if it did, there would have been a major release of radioactivity. It would have jeopardized the immediate and long-term safety of millions of Americans, not to mention the single biggest source of fresh water which exists in the world, namely the Great Lakes. The Government Accountability Office later weighed in on the incident, calling it, quote, the most serious safety issue confronting the nation's commercial nuclear power industry since Three Mile Island. The Department of Justice said that First Energy, the company that was involved, admitted that they, quote, knowingly made false representations to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the course of attempting to persuade the NRC that its Davis-Bessie nuclear power station was safe to operate beyond December 31st, 2001. Why would First Energy do this? Very clear. They put profit before the safety of millions of people. The cratered reactor head was replaced. It too began to fail. First Energy reluctantly agreed to replace it with a new one instead of a slightly used one. To replace the reactor head, they had to cut into the concrete shield building. When they did that, they found cracks in the building, lots of them. As you know, the shield building is the last line of defense in the event of a nuclear reactor meltdown because it prevents radioactivity from being released. It's also supposed to protect the reactor from external missiles like a plane. So if it's cracked, the plant is vulnerable. We watched First Energy and the NRC's handling of the crack, suspecting they try to minimize the significance of the damage in the building. We found inconsistencies in the stories we were getting from First Energy, the stories the NRC was getting from First Energy, and the stories we were getting from the NRC. Now they're trying to convince us now that the cracks which surround the building are the result of a blizzard in 1978. And that the cracks aren't new or a result of the aging process. So what is First Energy and the NRC's solution to a cracked protective structure? Paint it. And I suggest whitewash as an appropriate cover. I have asked for a full investigation by the NRC Inspector General because the NRC has once again shown itself to be more of a friend than an impartial regulator of the industry. Now, thanks to the pressure that we've been applying, we've heard that the problem with the cracks in the shield building may not be restricted to Davis-Bessie. It may be affecting plants across the nation. If the cracks require repair, it'll be extremely expensive, even cost prohibitive. We need to continue to watch over Davis-Bessie and other nuclear power plants to make sure their owners are paying attention to safety rather than profits. And I want to thank my friends at Beyond Nuclear, people like Kevin Camps, who've been doing a wonderful job at citizen oversight over Davis-Bessie. Let's hear it for and what's important to remember is that every individual, every group represented here needs to be mindful in monitoring the various plants around the country within your own neighborhood so that you can share the information and get it out to the public. Now, just last week, an NRC engineer turned whistleblower when he requested an investigation from the Inspector General along the same lines that I had asked for. He accused, this is an NRC whistleblower, accused the NRC of covering up critical information in a report that exposed how nuclear power plants were vulnerable to flooding. He specifically discussed a plant in South Carolina that lies downstream of a dam. He said the probability of the Jocassee Dam catastrophically failing is hundreds of times greater than a 51-foot wall of water hitting Fukushima Daiichi. And like the tsunami in Japan, the man-made tsunami resulting from the failure of the Jocassee Dam will with absolute certainty, if it happens, it would result in the failure of three reactor plants along with their containment structures. This is from the NRC whistleblower. It's not a given fact that the Jocassy Dam is going to fail in the next 20 years. The engineer has said that. But he added that it is a given that if it does fail, the three reactor plants will melt down and release their radionuclides into the environment. Perhaps the biggest problem the nuclear industry has right now is financial. Private investors don't see it as a good investment. And they don't see that plants can be funded without government help. So nuclear plant owners are turning to the government. These nuclear plant owners, by the way, they're part of that 47%. They're turning to the government to guarantee the private loans if the investment goes bad. And we're talking about tens of billions of dollars here. One plant alone would need a guarantee in the neighborhood of $8 billion. And there's a bipartisan objection to such massive subsidies. I offered an amendment to stop this loan guarantee program with my friend and Republican colleague, Mr. McClintock from California. It was endorsed by many strong environmental organizations, as well as some rather conservative organizations. And the coalition is growing, which is an object lesson here. And that is that in order to build the coalitions that we need to bring this issue to a point where it's not only discussed and deliberated, but resolved, we need to reach across the political spectrum. Because we can find support across the political spectrum. The problems facing nuclear power don't just stop there. Nuclear power is even less viable right now because the alternatives are so much cheaper. Financial analysts specifically cite the price of natural gas as one of the reasons the nuclear industry is struggling. And of course, the horrific meltdowns in Fukushima, which we've heard about earlier, remind us all how vulnerable we are, not just in Japan, but everywhere. And I just want to say that I know that I can speak for everyone in this room to say that our hearts go out to the people of Japan for the catastrophe that you've suffered, for the immediate effects and the long-term effects, which will concern generations of Japanese. And, you know, once again, the Japanese people, your suffering is the suffering of the world. And your suffering needs to be understood by the world, because the world has important lessons to learn from the suffering of the Japanese people. And I would ask everyone in this room to honor and salute the presence of our guests from Fukushima, and thank you for your. The facts are clearly in our favor. Nuclear power should be allowed to fail as an energy source. Unfortunately, facts aren't enough, particularly in this town. We have to change a mindset, and we have to change a game that's rigged. The mindset doesn't get the attention it deserves. I spent several hours on the floor of the House yesterday trying to create the debate, which eventually resulted in stopping this new national park which glorifies the bomb. And, you know, the supporters of the bill are prepared to memorialize the Manhattan Project without properly memorializing the unprecedented destruction which it brought. You can't talk about the technology without talking about its effects. And that schism in our thinking, technology here, effects there, is our mission to challenge and to replace it with integrative thinking, with holistic thinking, with thinking which sees the world and cognizes the world as an undivided whole. There's a sense in which when the atom was split, it really split the consciousness of our country. It really was the beginning of an intensification of dichotomized thinking, of us versus them, whoever they are. and a dichotomy between man and nature. We have to, humanity and nature, we have to reconcile ourselves with the natural world. That's the essence of sustainability. But we also have to be aware of the warning for the philosopher Alfred North Whitehead, who once wrote that the major technological advances in societies are processes that almost destroy the societies in which they occur. You know, there's a thing about not letting our humanity be swept away as we are congratulating ourselves on how clever we are with our inventions. Now, we have to change the way the game is rigged as well. I just want to close with giving you this thought. Thanks to the Citizens United decision, we're now in a country that is closer to $1, one vote, than one person, one vote. The nuclear industry has copious amounts of money to spend to defend their hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidies. Rest assured that as long as they're permitted to do this, they'll spend that money to defend their ability to contribute without limits to elections and candidates. And they wouldn't do it unless it works. It's an investment. So the opportunity to challenge nuclear power is right now. And it's critical that we do it in a way that is based on facts, has numbers on our side, and also looks at the bigger picture about where we're going as a society. And that's why this panel is so important. That's why I am honored to have the chance to share a moment with you and to thank Mike Leonardi and all those who helped to organize this. The panelists will have a lot to say. If I have a chance after the vote on H.R. 5987 to come back here and give you a report, I will. But if you can tweet to help us defeat H.R. 5987, send out a note right now to people, call their members, and ask them to vote against the Manhattan Project National Park. The bomb technology is not a walk in the park. So I want to thank all of you. Keep it up. I look forward to continuing to work with you. I don't need a certificate of election to stay involved. Thank you very much.
Dennis Kucinich of Ohio addressing a multi-party gathering for a new anti-nuclear movement over the weekend in Washington, and the legislation that was gathering to be voted on at that moment was, we can now report, successfully defeated. It is H.R. 5987, also known as the Manhattan Project National Historical Park. And with the leadership of Representative Kucinich, it was defeated by a margin of 237 to 180 under special rules that limit debate but require a two-thirds majority in the House for passage. It is likely to come up again in the Senate and possibly to be reintroduced in the House of Representatives. There was a wide coalition voting against it, including 112 Republicans and 68 Democrats. And the bill would establish the so-called Manhattan Project Monument in three locations across the United States where the development of the atomic bombs, both the fission and fusion bombs, took place. Those places are Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Los Alamos, New Mexico, and Hanford, Washington, now a highly contaminated site of nuclear waste. Representative Kucinich was not the only person of medical and environmental concerns that was present there. Also was Jill Stein, the presidential candidate of the Green Party of the United States for president, and she addressed a fundraising concert event associated with the Committee Against Nukes new movement for an international ban of atomic power.
Yes, we do need a nuclear-free world, free of nuclear power and free of nuclear weapons, and we need it now. And thanks so much to all of you for having the courage and the spine and the vision to stand up for what we want, for what we need, for what we deserve, and for what is within our reach. I've just come from a week packed with the Chicago Teachers Union strike and the teachers who are standing up. The poverty tour of Cornell West and Tavis Smiley and all the low-income people in poverty who are standing up, the Occupy Wall Street anniversary and all the occupiers who are standing up, and college campuses across the Midwest where young people are standing up to end student debt, to bail out the students and not the bankers. And that's just in the last week. And, you know, this campaign has been the opposite of what I expected. I've been running for office almost nonstop as part of building the opposition over the last decade, and thought that this race would be the most difficult, bitter, vicious of all. But in fact, it's been exactly the opposite. It's as if there has been a political earthquake that's happened under our feet that has not yet been recognized. So I want to really bring the good news to you, how strong this movement is out there, that there is a rebellion in full swing, and the anti-nuclear, nuclear-free movement is a key part of that rebellion. Thank you so much for having the courage and the dedication to be able to stand up and say what it is that we need, and that we need nothing less. That you are not just kowtowing to the powers that be and asking for, oh, just a little bit. You're really asking for a nuclear-free world with the abolition of nuclear weapons. None of this demonizing of Iran. If you want to stop Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons, we need a nuclear-free Middle East entirely, as well as a nuclear-free world. Likewise, on nuclear power, I think to be standing up and saying that we need to close down. It's not just stop building new nuclear plants, but to actually close down the ones that we have, starting with the 23 Fukushima-like nuclear power plants that are disasters waiting to happen. And the good news is that this quest for a safe world, a healthy world, an economy that can actually work and not be burdened by, you know, the devastation of more nuclear plant blowups. All of this, you know, it's a win-win for all of us to move to clean, renewable energy and conservation. That's where we get the cheapest energy, 1 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour, instead of this 25 to 30 cents with nuclear, which is the most expensive, dirty, and unsustainable and dangerous form of energy that there is. And we're saying no more. It's, you know, I think it's remarkable that public opinion is as mobilized as it is now in the wake of Fukushima against nuclear weapons. You know, depending on the poll, you'll get different results, but largely in the wake of Fukushima, we've mostly seen real opposition grow in many countries around the world. And, you know, I think it's especially remarkable because the messages we're still hearing over and over again are pro-nuclear, are from the nuclear power industry. Yet, and we have not had the political leadership, with very few exceptions, we've not had the political leadership to stand up and say that is wrong and that is false. Yet, in spite of that, the public hangs in there, and in many countries, strongly favors nuclear abolition now. So, as we begin to change, to break the sound barrier and to change the message, I think there's no doubt that we can bring the broader public along. Given the fact that 1 out of every 3 Americans now lives within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant, we have a very powerful message about how to create safer and more sustainable communities, as well as more safe, reliable, and cheaper energy, and to create far more jobs, because for every dollar that is spent on nuclear or fossil fuel energy, we can create three times as many jobs in the area of clean renewable energy and conservation. When given a choice, the public over and over again will choose the right thing. The problem is the powers that be, the political elite, supported by the economic elite, like the weapons industry and the nuclear power and the fossil fuel industry, they're always framing it as a choice between jobs and a safe and sustainable environment. That's no choice at all. We can't have either without the other. We need jobs with a sustainable and healthy environment. That's the only economy that can go forward. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about the Green New Deal and what the real alternative is for creating jobs, for putting an end to nuclear energy and nuclear weapons, for putting an end to wars for oil and making them obsolete by moving to a green economy and green energy as an emergency measure to meet both of these crises, both the climate crisis as well as the crisis in jobs and unemployment. We deserve a solution to both of those crises right now that is within our reach, and it is really the only solution on the horizon. So there is a very good plan to make this happen for less than the cost of the president's first stimulus package, which was an enormous amount. It did have some energy, some green energy in it, but it had an awful lot of tax breaks, and tax breaks, unfortunately, don't create jobs. The key to both the Democratic and Republican economic recovery plans is essentially the deregulation of energy, including nuclear and fossil fuel energy, as well as the deregulation of Wall Street, as if we didn't have enough of that, as well as tax breaks for the so-called job creators. You know, there are very few differences. There are some, but they won't be enough difference to save your life between the Democrats and the Republicans, which is why it's so important for us to be standing up now for a nuclear-free future and the kind of future we deserve. One last point, which is that in the many countries right now where there is a surge of public opinion into the 80s and 90 percentile opposition against new nuclear power and supporting the shutdown of nuclear plants, the one country that has firmly committed to phasing out its nuclear power plants is the one country where there is a strong opposition party in the form of the Green Party. As Frederick Douglass said famously, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. We have to bring that demand into the realm of electoral politics. Otherwise, all the work that we do out in the street, out in front of the nuclear power plants, out in front of the nuclear weapons facilities, all of that work will be overwhelmed by the repression emanating from the voting booth. Now, it's true, the voting booth is not a pure application of democracy by any means. It is a rigged system, in some places more rigged than others. But as we know from being out there and fighting the fight on the streets, that too is a steeply tilted playing field. When the ground you stand on can be declared sites of special national security and you can be thrown into jail and declared a felon and locked up for 10 years simply for being at a site that they declare sacrosanct and where protests are basically off limit. You don't even have to know that in order to be convicted of a felony. And to be facing militarized police forces with helicopters swirling overhead, it reminds us that our democracy is imperiled in the same way that the safety and health of our future is imperiled. But the silver lining in this dark cloud is that these movements Americans, for democracy, for peace, for social and economic justice, for workers' rights, to stop the foreclosure crisis, to bail out the students and not the Wall Street banks, to put an end to these expanding free trade agreements, which the president continues to negotiate, that send our jobs overseas and undermine wages here at home. There is a remarkable, breathtaking convergence that is taking place right now as people recognize that we are a whole society. There are many pieces to it. And in order to have the future that we need, it must be peaceful. It must be just. It must be democratic. It must be green and sustainable. And it must be nuclear free. Thank you for doing the work to lead us forward. Thank you so much.
Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we're covering some of the events of the mobilization that took place over the weekend in Washington, D.C. Also present there was Mariko Binder. She is an advocate for children of Fukushima and also a leader with the World Network for Saving Children from Radiation. And she spoke about those issues as well as a disturbing new social trend that is occurring in Japan, where women of Fukushima are now considered by some to be undesirable spouses because of the potential for nuclear mutations during childbirth.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to this today. I am here to represent Fukushima children. I am Mariko Binder, a Japanese citizen living in the United States. But I have taken my sons to Japan every year since my son was 4 months old. So it was greatly a part of my life. I was once a Fukushima child. Remember Godzilla? The Godzilla monster attacked Fukushima. He was born from a nuclear explosion. Who could imagine Godzilla would haunt us almost 60 years later? It's ironic, a Fukushima man created him. Fukushima was beautiful. Its mountains, its lakes, hot springs, parks with ponds and cherry blossom trees. Now, radiation took over. This radiation has spread to California and across the United States. It continues to spread out and contaminate the soil, the ocean, and our planet. This didn't happen to you, and it's ongoing. Dr. Helen Caldicott said, if Unit 4 collapses, I will evacuate my family from Boston. Not from Japan, from Boston. We are about 50 miles away from Calvert Cliffs and 96 miles from North Anna. How safe are we really? Were we told that nuclear power is safe and the accident wouldn't occur? Did you know that in Japan, the usual 1 millisievert has been raised to 20 millisieverts per year? 20 times more. In Chernobyl, anyone exposed to more than 5 millisieverts a year was evacuated. Others in area of 1 to 5 millisieverts were offered relocation. People in Fukushima are trapped in this highly contaminated area. It is as if they are in a gas chamber. People exposed to more than 1 or 5 or even more millisieverts a year live there. This is very personal because my father and sister still live in Fukushima too. My father refuses to leave. My sister will not abandon him. My sons ask, when can we visit Grandpa? I don't have an answer. There are many people like my family. Some live separately. A father stays in Fukushima for his job. a mother and children left Fukushima, families are torn apart. People in Fukushima are victims, but in reality, they are discriminated against. My sister's friend's engagement was broken off. We don't want a bride from Fukushima, she was told. People in Fukushima hear mixed messages and are confused. The government tells them, you are safe to live in Fukushima. And I encourage them to return to live in highly contaminated areas. The media filters and give limited, rather biased information. Doctors in Fukushima say, you are okay to be exposed up to 100 millisieverts. Radiation is not inherited, that's what they say. Feel safe to give birth to a baby in Fukushima. Propaganda is heard across the land. Let's eat food from Fukushima to support. Doctors and scientists outside Fukushima warn them, however. Dr. Kaliko said, for example, all people, particularly children and pregnant women, should be immediately evacuated from high radiation zones. 360,000 children still remain in Fukushima, and 75% of them are living in highly contaminated areas. Imagine your son cannot play soccer on weekends. Imagine your daughter cannot swim in the pool without fear of radiation. In Fukushima, you see no small children play in the park and walk on the street. They look through the window and remember when they used to run around outside. Babies there will never know what ordinary life once was. School kids in Fukushima hear a different story. Their schools tell them to play sports outside and swim in the outside pool. Can you imagine you have even though the air is filled with radiation. Business as usual. One common thing for all children in Fukushima is they all eat food with radioactive materials. Can you imagine you have no choice but to feed your children with fruits, vegetables, and cereal with radiation as additives? Children in Fukushima cannot breathe like we do. Every moment of their lives, they are breathed in radiation. And the radiation goes into your skin, into their thyroid, and their lungs, and alters their DNA. The Health Management Survey found abnormal thyroid growth in 43% of children in Fukushima. But doctors say not to be concerned. They are reluctant to give the test result to a patient and discourage the second opinion. Patients have to wait two years for follow-up. One child is discovered to have thyroid cancer just recently. This survey is screening, not for treatment. What is the real purpose? Children have lost muscles, they are under stress, there are signs of diabetes and heart disease. Member of Fukushima just recently visited Naljiji in Ukraine and visited nursery schools and the hospital. There are 1,000 children over there, and every single child over there have multiple diseases. Every child. 26 years later of Chernobyl accident. I really want you to think about that. I want to share some voices from children of Fukushima. Can I give birth to a healthy baby when I grow up? Can I let my dog run around outside one day? Why do we have to suffer from the nuclear power plant adults built? Please protect us from radiation. lives of Fukushima children are in our hands, in the responsible adults' hands. I'm asking you a little plain, ordinary, everyday kindness. Help evacuate children now. Call the office of Japanese Prime Minister, email them and tell them that we want the children out. Please give children a chance to breathe the fresh air like your children do. Help us build a clinic to treat children with thyroid issues. This is urgent. We need the independent clinic. Go to our website, World Network for Saving Children from Radiation, to find out more. Save the children and our future children. We must act now. Thank you.
Mariko Bender of the Saving the Children from Radiation Project in Japan. This is 5 o'clock shadow. We're hearing proceedings of the new anti-nuclear movement international level. And while members of Congress were being addressed inside the Cannon building with speeches such as these, there was also a rally outside at the reflecting pool down the steps from the United States Capitol.
I want to welcome everybody here and thank you for making some of the long journeys that you have made, and we did a lot of work to publicize this event and all over the country, and we have a lot of work to do, as you can see from the crowd here. I want to thank these guys right here from the media that have shown up. And I want to point out that apart from our own media team, it looks like there's only Japanese media here. Yay! And so I would like to point out that our media in the United States is a shameful disgrace when it comes to how they're covering nuclear issues in this country, when it comes to how they're covering global climate change issues in this country. Our media is a disgrace. Yay! Our Congress that sits up here on the Hill is another disgrace. They're not addressing these issues in any way, shape, or form. Since Fukushima happened in Japan on 3/11, there's been a gross cover-up that's been going on by the United States media, by the United States government, to downplay the threat that nuclear power plays in all of our lives. I come from Toledo, Ohio. Toledo is smack dab between two very dangerous nuclear power plants. Fermi 2 nuclear power plant that sits on the shore of Lake Erie, halfway between Toledo and Detroit, and the Davis-Bessie nuclear power plant, halfway between Toledo and Cleveland. Both of these plants, the Fermi 2 nuclear power plant is the largest Mark 1 design nuclear power plant in North America, and it's designed exactly like the Fukushima reactors that melted down in Japan. Davis-Bessie, Fermi 2 have released radioactivity into our environment on numerous occasions, as have all 104 nuclear power plants, decrepit and aged, that threaten populations across this country.
Every single day.
Let's not forget about Indian Point, which threatens the largest population center. 17 million people in Manhattan if there were to be a meltdown at the Indian Point nuclear power plant. We're not completely abandoned by our political representatives. We have some people that are standing up for us. We should acknowledge the good work that some people are doing. Representative Dennis Kucinich today, who is hosting our briefing, and his office has done a lot of work to coordinate with us. Representative Markey of Massachusetts, that's been doing great work on nuclear oversight issues regarding the Palisades nuclear power plant on Lake Michigan, where he's called for an Inspector General's investigation into the NRC cover-up of safety issues there. Yeah. And this is something that we hear over and over again, and it's why we're going to the NRC tomorrow. Nuclear cover-up of safety issues from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that is just giving a green light to these corporations like Exelon, like Entergy, like First Energy, that are just putting us in danger continuously day after day. We do have some support. Markey, Barbara Boxer, is listening to us, is dialogue with us in California. Of course, we have Senator Bernie Sanders in Vermont that's leading the charge to shut down Vermont Yankee. So we're not alone. I'd like to thank Roots Action today, who sent out a petition to over 175,000 people over the last couple days to get the notice in that we're having this congressional briefing. I'd like to acknowledge the help that we've received from the No Nukes Sierra Club team, from Friends of the Earth, from Greenpeace, from NEARS, from Beyond Nuclear, from our nuclear watchdog organizations, and some of our environmental groups here in Washington, D.C. I'd like to just close by reading a statement, and of course, I didn't prepare any of the words that I'm saying right now. It's all ad lib. But I want to close with a statement from Kumar Sundaram from New Delhi, India. And I really think that we need to look to Japan, and we need to look to India for the leadership that we need, for the model that we need to confront nuclear power, where instead of a spattering of hundreds of people, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are putting themselves on the line to challenge their state and corporations that are threatening them. We are here partly because of their lead, thanks to the great work of the people of Japan and India in highlighting what it takes to challenge this industry. It's going to take thousands. It's going to take next year coming back here and this thing being filled. It's going to take filling places like this across the country. It's going to take a grassroots organizing strategy that means that we need to have resources. We need to go to the churches. We need to go to the community groups. We need to go to the labor unions. We need to reach out everywhere on all facets at a grassroots level to build this movement. And we need to do it quickly. So let me close with these remarks from Kumar from India, where they're fighting the Kundankulam nuclear power plant. This is Kumar. We strongly condemn the brutal police repression underway in India on the peaceful anti-nuclear protesters in Kundankulam on the southern tip of India. Within these last few weeks, innocent fishermen have died in this military-style attempt to start the reactor. More than 57,000 innocent people in Kundankulam are facing some kind of fictitious police case, while charges of sedition and war against the Indian state have been slapped against more than 7,000 protesters. While the much-hyped Indo-US deal was touted as a great rendezvous between the world's oldest and largest democracies, the reactors coming as a convergence of this deal in India are being built without any consultation with people and brushing aside unanimous resolutions by the Democratic Village Councils. The United States, as well as other nuclear suppliers, have openly asked India to amend its Nuclear Liability Act to ensure liability, a liability-free playing field. The consistently peaceful protests going on for the last 25 years has raised several serious questions. We urge that this brazen contempt for human rights in dealing with democratic and peaceful dissent must come to an end, and the government must initiate open dialogue with the people. This is a message from India. If you do not know about the Kundankulam nuclear reactor, Google it and learn about it. We need to look to India and Japan. Because, as I said last night when I was driving in the taxi cab, the number one cause of cancer around the world is right there, the Washington capital, our capital, our government. Our government has nuclearized Japan. Our government has nuclearized India. Our government is force-feeding nuclear down the throat of Italy, even after the citizens rose up to pass a referendum to ban nuclear power. It's our government that is like a nuclear pusher around the world. So it's not only here in the United States that we have to be concerned, but we have to stand in solidarity with people in India and Japan to fight nukes. Thank you. Bye.
We are against media blackout. On 15th and 16th of March, when the biggest boom hit Tokyo, I was there, working outside all day long. I can never forget my despair when I knew Reactor 3 possibly had a nuclear explosion. If media and Japanese government announced meltdown was ongoing, I would have evacuated sooner. Where's media here? Raise your hands. I was exposed. I was too late to evacuate. This is a concrete fact. I might die of leukemia or cancer in the future. But I have to say this. I will never forgive you, media. Never. And the decision to save economy for the lives of people in eastern Japan, they chose slow death for the longer life of economy. I came here to ask your help for Japan. Immediately after March 11, I understood we can never trust the government. Never. We have to ask for your help. America pushed nuclear energy to Japan.
Yes.
I demand you, America, to open the country and help people.
Yeah! Yes!
Japanese government is planning to send disaster debris to Saipan. Japan is still exporting fishery products to America. Cooling system keeps being disordered. If another earthquake hits Fukushima, it's also the end of America. 44% of Fukushima children have thyroid nodules or cysts, and 98% of the medicine is made in Fukushima. Japan is a small country. We can't save ourselves. For the children, you American, please move your country. Please move your government. Please have them reveal all the truth and save the world. My parents are still in Japan and they're sick. I came here as a messenger. Thank you.
Iori Mochizuki of the Fukushima Diary part of the new international mobilization against nuclear power. For further information, one might contact coalitionagainstnukes.org. And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow, produced by Thiago Peroso and engineered by Michael G. Haskins. We welcome your comments at theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.